This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
Good morning. It is a pleasure to be here. Again, I was here the last time 15 years ago, and I had a great time. And I think probably one of the reasons I kept teaching was that I came to Faith Builders 15 years ago or 16 years ago. So it's good to be back. It's good to be here. In 1958, in New York City, there was a new teacher that waited in his classroom. And he waited to meet his new high school students for the year. He was newly qualified by his 4 years of college. And so he sat in his room with his freshly sharpened pencils on his desk and the stacks of books on the desk to hand out, with the smell of chalk dust and antiseptic in the air, like is in many classrooms. And he waited. And he heard them coming down the hall. They entered, pushing and scuffling with each other a little bit. They were curious to see how this new teacher would react to them. And they knew that new teachers were easy to push around, easy to handle. You could do anything with new teachers because they were too scared to discipline. You could have a good fight while the teacher went off to the principal's office to get the principal. And so two boys started to tussle a little bit. Pete said, "Anybody want a bologna sandwich?" And they said, "No, your mama must hate you if she gives you a bologna sandwich for lunch." And Pete threw his sandwich and landed on the floor. And the teacher said, "Hey, 4 years of teaching, or 4 years of college learning English." And his first words in the classroom were, "Hey." It didn't work, so he said it again. "Hey, stop that. Don't throw the sandwich." And the students looked at him. "Don't throw the sandwich," he says. Well, there's nothing sillier than a teacher telling them not to do something they've already done. And so Benny smirked, and he said, "Teach, he already threw the sandwich. There's a sandwich on the floor." And what is a teacher supposed to do now? Should he glare at them and lecture it about wasting food? Should he stomp over and grab the sandwich himself and put it in the trash can? Should he order the student to pick up the sandwich? And should he threaten to send him to the principal? What's he supposed to do now? So we are talking about building connections with our students this week. So what am I talking about when I talk about building connections? Am I just talking about relationships? Is this something that's you know, warm and fuzzy? Are we talking about being able to impart knowledge very well? I think I want to define building connections with your students in this way. We talk about earning their trust and cooperation, understanding what motivates them and what shuts them down, and also caring for them individually, caring for them deeply. You know, one of the great joys of teaching for me has been the friendships that come as a result of the teaching. And it's always nice to bump into a former student and just hear how they're doing, hear how their life is going. But teaching school is not meant to be a way for me to just make friends. So it's one of the great blessings that I think I have enjoyed from teaching school is all the friendships that come. But that's not why we teach school, actually. Now, what makes some teachers stand out in your memory as more influential, possibly? It might be that they were kind and safe. You felt welcome in their presence. It might be that they were very knowledgeable about their material. It might be their charisma or their presence a little bit. whatever it is, if you have favorable memories like that about them, it indicates there was a connection that was made. But, you know, really, how important is it that teachers connect with their students? Because you can actually learn quite a lot from a video, from a YouTube video. And we probably all do. We probably learn a lot from it. But there is something that's missing there. There's a human element that is missing in a video. And part of our human makeup is a longing for heroes and for mentors, for people to look up to. So there's a Harvard study that says every child who ends up doing well has at least one stable and committed relationship with a supportive adult in their life. And not every child, unfortunately, not every child has that at home. And you can be that in the classroom. Now, one of the things that's vital as we talk about this is to understand who you are, or what is your role as the teacher. There was a well-known school teacher who said that a teacher is called to be a theologian and a philosopher and a comedian and a counselor and a dress code enforcer and a policeman and a singer and a politician. And this was said in jest, but it does feel like we're asked to wear an awful lot of hats sometimes in the classroom. We're asked to do lots of different things. And this creates a lot of pressure on us. It's not really helpful. It's not realistic or helpful. So I think it's helpful as we think of building good connections in these relationships that we're talking about. First of all, it's helpful if we understand who we are. What is our role in the classroom? Now, I remember a few years ago, Melvin Lehman came out to WFTI and he talked to us. And he shook his finger at us and told us that there's a bunch of things that we are not. And I remembered that, and I thought I would just steal that this morning because all work and no plagiarism makes a dull speech, right? So one of the things I remember, he told us, you are not the buddy. And I think that's true. I have found that to be true. It does not work to be the buddy to your students because you can't discipline your buddy when you have to. You are not the parent. Thank goodness sometimes, actually in my case, sometimes I have been the parent. I have taught two of my students and I will have two of my students the next year. That's been good, mostly. You are not the pastor, unless you might be that most of you are not. You are not the counselor. It's good for you to remember that you are not the counselor. Now, you give counsel. You give a listening ear. You are a mentor. But if there is need for in-depth counseling, it is good if that is not you. It's good if that is somebody else. And you are the teacher. Embrace your role. It's important that you are comfortable in your own skin. Harry Wong, in The First Days of School, that wonderful book, instructs us to beg, borrow, and steal. Whatever we need to teach, that is very good advice. You cannot borrow, beg, or steal somebody else's personality. You have to be the person that God made you. Now, there tends to be two types of teachers in our schools. Those who teach because they really love the subjects that they're teaching. Whether it's chemistry or algebra or whatever it is, they really love that. They get all enthusiastic about the subject. And that's almost the main drive for them to teach school. And those are the type of teachers who are, we call them relational teachers. They really love the students. They love the relationships that result. Both of these types have their strength, and I think both types really need to build connections with their students to be successful. For what it's worth, you know, there's a lot of opinions shared in teacher tutorials, especially if you do any research online about teachers, that the best types of teachers are those who are relational teachers. Not sure that's true. If you think it is, that's fine. You can argue with me. But I think both types of teachers are excellent, can be excellent teachers. Now, you may have students who come to school eager to just learn. They're eager to learn algebra. They're just ready to soak it in. That is so wonderful. But that is not the case for everybody. And for those students in particular who struggle with school, you might have to work just a little bit harder to build connections. So why should we build connections? I am going to guess that most of you agree that it's good for us to have good connections with our students. So I'm not going to belabor this point too much. But there are two reasons I want to think about that I think it is very valid for us to consciously work at building connections. And that is, number one, is it fosters collaboration. That's the word for the day that I put on your handout. Collaboration, and that is simply a word for working together. And there are examples of this everywhere in school where we need to work together. It might be the students working together, group projects, sharing ideas, playing a team sport. And if in school, if a teacher has good connections with the student, if he understands them and they sense that the teacher cares for them, the students are much more likely to cooperate. You know, we value a lot more highly the words of somebody that we trust, okay? And the second point is that it boosts morale and productivity. Now think about going to work. I'm going to assume that most of you have held down a job besides school teaching at some point or another. And so we all have to go to work and make money. Sometimes it's just to support your teaching habit. You have to go to work a little bit. Like my friend Mylon Overholt would say, we have to go to work so we can make money, so we can buy gas, so we can go to work. It's kind of the rat race when the rats are winning a little bit. So imagine, but though, at your place of employment, hopefully this doesn't take too much imagination, but just imagine that at the place of your employment, your boss is glad to see you show up. And he knows your name. And you have the clear impression that he cares about you. And he's looking out for you. Does this make any difference at all in your work, in your productivity, in your it's just enjoyment of going to work? Unless you're Eeyore, I think it does. I think it makes a big difference. Okay? You will be more successful. You will enjoy your work more. And you will work harder. So, 2 points there. So how do we build connections? How do we build connections to our students? First point, first thing is by the person you are or by your personality. So the first point under this heading is to smile. This was something that I read somewhere some years ago. I don't remember where it was, but this article about an interview with students and what students said about their teachers. And one thing that was said was that I wish she would smile. And this was a younger student talking. I said, it's so sad, or it's scary when she doesn't smile. And yeah, that's a good thing to remember. That's a really good thing to remember. Great teachers smile. They smile when they greet their students in the morning. They smile when they're happy. And they smile when they're scared, too. It's a good thing to do. If you could put a real smile on. Okay? And the second point is to be cool. Keep your cool. Now, I know some of you may be disappointed that a speaker would descend into the gutter of American slang and pull up this, you know, well-worn phrase, to be cool. But it is a term that works, I think. And it's very important. It's really important for a teacher to learn to keep his emotions in check. Now, I'm not saying you should always be quiet and subdued in your classroom. That's not what I'm saying at all. A couple of years ago, my daughter said to me, we were talking after supper, and she said, Dad, did you know Holly is scared of you? I said, really? Why? She says you're too loud. Really? Well, interesting. So I met Holly in the hallway, and she's a pretty little girl. She's not in my classroom. So I guess if they were all hearing it, I maybe was a little too loud. I said, Holly, are you scared of me? And she said, Is it because I'm too loud? Okay, well, that was good for me to hear. And so I did temper my shouts of joy in the classroom, a little bit at least, I think. But it was good for me to hear too, to understand that especially for a small person, it's scary if the teacher shouts at them, even if he's not angry or anything like that. And I want to emphasize this point especially, do not raise your voice when you're upset. That does a tremendous amount of damage. But when you're calling them down, teachers need to learn to really keep their cool. Understand, everybody has bad days. Even you as a teacher will have bad days. And it's just very important that you stay calm. It's good for you to be passionate, enthusiastic, but when things go south, just be quiet, calm, smile sometimes. It's a safe practice that when you get upset, keep your words light. Don't barb them and make them pointed. I would say, especially with younger students, I remember 14 years ago approximately, I was teaching second grade and I had this little blonde girl with big blue eyes. And I learned I had to be so careful when I talked to her because she was scared of me. And I think I was just a little bit too loud, just a little bit too enthusiastic in the classroom. I remember when I would try to do flashcards with her and I would just, it's just completely unthreatening. I was just being happy. Just that time, she would just start crying. And so I had to learn to just really be gentle in my speech. I would also say that if you have children or students who come from homes with trauma, with maybe some abuse, that is very, very important that you do not show anger to them in any way. Keep your cool. So many times when I didn't think I was angry. I didn't think I was upset. I mean, I knew I was a little upset inside, but I wasn't showing it. But the students would pick up on it. And one student in particular who was concerned what I thought about her, she would ask me, "Are you mad at me?" No. Why would you think I was? Well, there was some facial tics. There was something that she thought I was mad at her. I wasn't, mostly. C is to always be kind. Frank Peretti said in his autobiography, there is never a reason to be unkind. Easy thing to say. It's a hard thing to do, hard thing to remember. It's sometimes all right to be blunt. Not beat around the bush, tell the student, you know what, this is not working for you. Okay, that's good. But it's never right to be unkind. And there are those times in the classroom when a student has an attitude and you could cut them down just a little bit. And it would be kind of fun to do it, right? That is something you will regret. I think as I look back on teaching, the mistakes that I've made and the good times that I've had, but one of the biggest things that I would regret is the moments when I was unkind, when I said something or did something or showed unkindness. Okay, D, be positive and enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is inspiring. It is so inspiring to have somebody who cares about the subject, cares about you, cares about what you're doing. And Glendon illustrated that for us so well here with his preview. Somebody who cares about their subject, who's a good salesman. That's excellent. We're going to talk more about that later. And, the opposite side to this, and probably the one that you should be even more concerned about, is that negativity is catching. Like, who is it? Mark Twain says, it's catching like a harrow in the dark. You can't get over it. You can't get past it. And if you are negative in the classroom with your attitude about anything involving school, it's catching. You cannot make negative comments about math or language or the school board or anything. You can't. You just can't. It's too catching. Okay, next point. Have a lively sense of humor. Laughter is so vital in the life and development of a child. You can fight it, you can embrace it, but you must have some in the classroom. You know, laughter is good medicine. It's been proven that a good belly laugh can increase the endorphins released by your brain and increase your oxygen. But you know, when you just talk about laughter, it's like Mark Twain said too, it's like dissecting a frog. You learn some things about it, but the frog dies. The same way with the laughter. So I have come to really value laughter in the classroom. And it might be a joke that the students bring and tell me. Sometimes it's something that we're reading and see this. Makes me think of the story of a judge in South Carolina, I believe, who had a young daughter, and this daughter had a pet turtle. And she was very fond of her pet turtle. And the judge came out one day and found the turtle had died. Very sad. So what is he going to do? He called his daughter in and said, I'm sorry your turtle died. But you know what? Death is part of life. And tell you what we'll do. We'll have a funeral. We'll have a funeral for this turtle. And the daughter said, well, what's a funeral? And the judge said, well, you know, it's kind of like a party. It's kind of like a party for when somebody dies. And she said, oh, a party. Can I invite my friends? And he said, yes, I guess you can invite your friends. Can we have cake and ice cream? And she said, yeah, sure, why not? How about balloons? Sure, I guess balloons at a funeral, sure, why not? And she was excited about this. And about that time, as they're looking at the dead turtle, started to move, started to walk away. And the daughter looked at the turtle in consternation. She said, Dad, let's kill him. So laughter, it does something to us, too. It connects us. It connects us in ways that other things really don't. Some of the ways that I do embrace laughter in the classroom is just to tell a story or something. We've read lots of books for story, and I do usually try to pick a book that has at least some funny scenes in it or some funny dialogue or something that we'll connect with. One of the books that we read over the years multiple times is a book about the main character is a seventh grade boy, and he has something negative to say about everything. And when he talks about school, he's fairly negative too. And one of the things he talks about is teacher jokes, how there's nothing so bad as a teacher joke. Nobody ever laughs at teacher jokes. So that's become a joke in our school. Nobody ever laughs at teacher jokes. And you know, when I inflict a joke on them and they try not to laugh, that is so funny. Yeah. One of the things we do too is I want them to know that I value a good joke. And they'll often ask me for a favor or something like that, and I'll say, yeah, if you can tell me a good joke, I haven't heard before, make me laugh. And often it's story time. Mr. John, can we pass the candy jar around? He said, sure, if you can tell me a good joke I haven't heard before. And they're never very good. The jokes are just never very good. It's like, what do you call a fly that's lost his wings? Well, it's a walk. That's pretty bad. But things like that. And it's a point of connection. It's a point of connection. So the main reason I really want to have laughter in my classroom is it connects us, it relaxes us, and it really brings us together. Did you know that there's such a thing as laughter therapy? I kind of thought there was, so I Googled it quickly, and sure enough, this laughter therapy website popped up, and I opened it, and this chat box came up, and it said, "Hello, how can we help you?" So I typed back, "You already did," and because that was what I wanted to know, actually. Now, a sense of humor also helps to keep you from getting offended, too. So it's more than just being funny. Sense of humor helps us to see the humor in things and keeps us from being offended, hopefully. It's good to develop a thick skin in teaching in school. I have to think about the parent who told me one time, I was talking to this parent about his child, and this child was really struggling in school, and he was telling me that, and I was telling him what I was doing, and we're helping her with her math, and she's moving at kind of at her own pace, and different things like that, and he said, "Well, you know, he doesn't really expect her to amount to anything, he doesn't really expect her to amount to that much. Life. Maybe a teacher, no, but the grand scheme of things, not too much." And I thought to myself, that's funny. That's just a little bit funny. You could be offended, but there's no point in it. And there's lots of things that happen in school where you put some work into something and the student doesn't like it, or there's some negative comment about it. It's really good if you develop a thick skin and just let it bounce off. I want to say, too, there can be lots of laughter at school that is not helpful. We do not. It's very important that you don't mock a student, a teacher, a parent, anybody. I don't like mocking laughter. Also, students can laugh to flirt or to show off or to get attention or to irritate other students or the teacher. But I would say that having good, healthy laughter at school helps to cut that down. I think I've spent enough time on that. But we could talk about that a lot more. The second point is by our words here. Be very careful with your words. I want to emphasize this point, especially if you are a new teacher. Your words have probably never carried so much weight before in your life. So be careful with your words. You will be quoted. People will remember, or your students will remember what you said. Whether you believe it or not, they will remember. I can't believe some of the things my students come back and tell me I said. And I just can't remember. I don't remember that. I had a couple of my students tell me one time, the difference between boys and girls is that girls tend to overthink everything that you say about them. Now, I'm not sure that that's true, but it's worth thinking about, especially if you're saying anything about them. Engage in small talk. Learn to do that. Small talk can have big gains in a relationship. Greet each student by name every day with a smile, if possible. Also, make sure you can pronounce their name correctly. It's a small detail, but I found out after years that I was pronouncing one of my students' names wrong, the last name. It was unfortunate. I read a study that indicated most teachers in the U.S. don't know most of their students' names. Not too surprised by that, because you're talking about maybe 200 students trying to remember their names. And I can hardly remember the difference between Amber and Abby sometimes, because they start the same. And maybe they're both blonde, right? I know which one is which, but I'll often call the wrong name sometimes. Find something positive to comment about them. Be very careful with this as well, especially when you're commenting about their appearance, anything. But they can appreciate it if you notice that, oh, they have a new jacket, or nice shoes, or whatever it is. Be very careful about this as well. And next point is to share your stories. We all have stories about our life. And your students are interested in your stories. They're interested in your stories about your work, about your childhood, about your courtship, if you were so fortunate as to have had one, things like that. Share your stories. I'm not going to here because I'm running out of time. By our actions, spend one-on-one time with each student. When students don't feel the need to perform, they will tend to be more honest with you. If you're talking to them one-on-one and they don't have all that peer pressure of other people listening, why, it's good. Good things can happen for that. This is true for all types of students, I think. The shy students, the life of the party students, I think it's helpful. And it makes them feel valued if you take the time to listen to them, look them in the eye, and then remember what they said and come back to them and ask them, you know, how did that go for you, or did that work, or are you still interested? Whatever it is, whatever you talk to them. Talk to them in the hall when you're waiting on something or when you're shooting baskets on the basketball court. This should always be done in a way that's non-invasive and non-threatening. Don't invade their personal space or make them feel like this is punitive, like we have to do this, but something that you enjoy, right? And also carve out space for discussion and conversation. I put this in the action section because I find I really do need to be intentional about creating these spaces for discussion in my school, in my classroom. One of them that I really enjoy is lunchtime conversations. I've made lots of connections over the years over lunchtime. And I like for my students to eat in my classroom. I don't like them to scatter across the playground in little groups. So I'm a little picky there. I tell them, this is the way we do it here, and they grumble at me a little bit, but this is good-natured, I think. Lunchtime is when they're often more relaxed, and we have good discussions. And it's good if you know how to start a discussion, too, because depending on your class, you just eat, right? And there's just quiet. But everybody likes a discussion. Generally, they do. And I found that I just open it up and make a discussion. It helps to have a topic that you ask them about or comment on. And one of the things that everybody likes that I know of is food. Anybody not like food? There might be some here who think it'd be great to have, you know, a pill that we take three times a day or three pills we take. Maybe you even do that. You probably do, some of you. But everybody likes food, and it's a great conversation starter. And one of the things that I really like is soup. I don't know why, but soup is good. I like all kinds of soup. I love clam chowder, especially Pacific clam chowder, not the Eastern stuff with carrots and celery and bacon. If you serve it for lunch, it'll be great. Don't worry. But that's I like the Pacific clam chowder. And so my wife will often send some to school, and I've got this little crock pot that I plug in there by my desk, and you can smell it about lunchtime, and it's so good, and I pray, and I take it to my desk, and I say, this is good. Soup, I have the best lunch today. And I wonder if we'll have soup in heaven. And my students said, no, Mr. John, of course we won't have soup in heaven because there's meat in it. Well, maybe there'll be, you know, some kind of tofu or something like that. We won't have to have any death. And we've had lots of discussion about soup and food and heaven. What would you eat if it was your last meal? That's a little bit morbid, so. Favorite restaurants. It's very interesting to me to hear some of my high school students talk about their favorite restaurant. And say that, you know, for the money, you can't do better than McDonald's. I thought that was great. Huh. That tells me something about you. The joy of owning horses versus the joy of dirt bikes or whatever it is. This is not just idle chatter. If you're listening, it gives you a glimpse into their life. Okay, also attend their special events. They notice when you care enough to show up for their birthday parties and baptisms and things like that. It means something to them. And I am not going to get into the recess time. And we will talk about that I think, on Thursday some. And one more thing is to be comfortable getting their attention, attracting their attention. So as we think of the young teacher in New York, and what is he supposed to do now? Should he glare at them and lecture them? What should he do? The teacher walked over and he looked at the sandwich on the floor, and it was still about half in the wax paper wrapping. So he bent down and he picked it up and he held it and he smelled it and he looked at it. He said, this is not just a limp sandwich of limp white bread and a thin bologna slice. This is a sandwich made with good brown bread and a ripe tomato and a big thick chunk of bologna and thick slices of bologna, mayonnaise and a dash of salt and pepper and a good pickle. This is a really good sandwich. This is an Italian sandwich made by an Italian mother for her son that she was proud of, probably, because he was in high school. So the teacher smelled this sandwich and he took a bite out of it. And the class said, "Whoa." And he stood in front of the class and he ate the whole sandwich down with juice dripping down his chin. Ate the whole thing down and licked his fingers, wadded up the wax paper wrapping, and tossed it at the wastebasket, hit the wastebasket, let it drop inside. And the class applauded, and he turned to the class and he realized that he had their complete attention. Thank you for your attention this morning.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.